Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/TheBarn. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TheBarn.
Hey there, this is Jonah from a million bands, including being the singer for Sons of Alpha Centauri. You are listening to the Vulgar Display of Podcast. Great fucking title. Enjoy.
To resurrect ourselves, we disembowel our saints. We never underestimate the destructive power of change.
Welcome to the Vulgar Display of Podcast, live from the Barn Studio. You got the Mox here, and I'm joined online with a special guest right now. We have Jonah from, like he said, a million bands, but right now we're talking about Sons of Alpha Centauri. Jonah, how are you, man?
I'm really good, man. Thanks for having me.
So you got the guitar there. What guitar you got?
It's a Taylor GS Mini. Shout out to Taylor for being my guitars for the last, but you know, this guitar's got about 1,000 shows in it last 10, 15 years. Good little beastie. Custom decorated with Sharpies, of course, as all good guitars should be. I just keep it in my hands because I feel more relaxed with the guitar in my hands, it turns out.
I have a Mini myself, and I have several different guitars. But my Taylor Mini is actually one of my favorites. And I think it's because that.
Isn't it fucking awesome?
I love the sort of punchy sound to it, but I love that, you know, it's hanging on my wall in my office. I can just grab it, you know, when I'm having a casual conversation with somebody and just kind of, you know.
That's it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's exactly right.
Is that a guitar you do writing? You know, do you write on that?
Yeah, I'm a pretty simple creature. I got a few guitars. I've sold a bunch over the years because I kind of get them. And then I just realized that I end up only playing one or two of my guitars just because they're kind of around. And so this is one that, yes, I reach to often. I have a little purple, tiny purple nylon string that I got for like 50. Lighting guitar, couch guitar. It's so light. And I don't know if you know, but nylon strings, they're so much more chill on the hands. So it's kind of a good, like, really relaxed guitar. And this one's my central show guitar. It's pretty central writing guitar, too.
You play guitar every day?
I'm sure I do. It's an oddly amazing question. I've never thought about that. I'll bet. It's funny. It's tough to remember a day in the recent past on which I would more likely not have picked up a guitar, because when I'm on tour, of course, always, I've always got a guitar with me. When I'm at home, there's always one around. Yeah, that's neat. That's neat. Yes, just about every day, kind of probably for more hours a day than I could ever understand, because a lot of the time is times like this where I'm not really focused on playing the guitar. I'm focused on talking to you and being with you, but the guitar is somehow a conduit for me to just relax my nervous system some, so then I get to hang out and be more chill in conversations. And then, yeah, when I'm alone, which I'm alone a lot too, guitars are really good company.
In a way, is it maybe a little bit of a security blanket, you think?
Oh, a lot of it. It's yeah, man. I mean, I music more than anything for me, I think, is a security blanket, and I think in a very healthy way. I think it's easy to sort of laugh at a security blanket because it's such a, a kid baby blanket kind of thing, and I get it. And there's certainly unhealthy security blankets that one can take on. They're called addictions, and of different sorts, interpersonal addictions, substance addictions, all that shit. And then there's, I think, good security blankets, which is like, I don't need the guitar to be okay. But man, given that the world is what it is and life is what it is, the guitar and music are such beautiful instruments of self-soothing. So fuck yeah. Yeah, security blanket guitar, baby.
Yeah, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way. I'm actually my
No, I know, I know. No, I didn't presume you did or not, but it's I just notice a lot, like in our culture, we joke about that shit a lot, make fun of it. But I think if more if more motherfuckers had healthy security blankets, we wouldn't have so much evil in the world. There you go.
So in my big boy job, my real job, I'm a therapist.
Oh,
And
no shit. Oh, dude. We might not talk about music the rest of the day. Holy shit.
And I'm really passionate about men's mental health because,
Yes.
so much of society has put this into our brains that we have to be these big, strong, and I'm guilty of it too. Do not take what
Oh,
I
same conditioning.
say. Yeah,
Yep. Good to
exactly.
be real.
And a lot of times what we talk about, even with my clients or in my therapy sessions or group sessions, if we talk about healthy ways to cope and unhealthy ways to
That's
cope,
right.
right? It's still
That's
coping,
right.
right? It's still a way to
That's
cope.
right.
Even people that don't fully understand, and not that I do, but people that don't have a background with addiction, they don't
Yeah,
really
yeah, yeah.
understand how that could be unhealthy, or even, cutting and self-harm. Well, that's a way
Hell yeah.
with feelings. It's not healthy, right? But something like music and something like a healthy approach to being, working out or sports or hobby,
Yes.
those can
Yes.
be ways to cope. I'm guessing music's sort of that for you.
It is. It is. And to your point, music, exercise, sex, money, food, substances, all of it. It's not the thing that is inherently good or bad as a coping mechanism. It's how I interact with it. And so music, I love it. And it's something I found that helped me feel less alone in the world and that's helped me cope with the world for sure. And if anyone out there listening, yeah, the point of this is definitely not about the music. It's about the mental health. And I'm with you, especially us dudes, where all this conditioning is towards giving away all of our relational ability and emotional ability just for the sake of some like tough something something, which is pile of bullshit anyway. And then women on the other side, women identifying people get put in this other box where they're not allowed to be assertive. So they get all the feelings and emotions and relational ability, and that's okay for them, but it's not okay for them to say what they want, for instance. Whereas dudes, I'm just taught, oh, this is what I want. And I'm not taught any sense of like there's a compromise or anything. So anyway, yeah, man. Here's to getting through it. I really love that you have a background in mental health. I have long thought, just to really tie all this shit together, that what, again, what I'm is important or not important. Yeah, no, important to me. Fuck anyone else. It's all good. But what's important to me about what I do is that it just helps me be a little bit less of an asshole, which is just a really it's a really important thing in this life because we're here together, and I don't know what the purpose is, and I don't got any big thing to say. All I know is that I could certainly treat myself a lot better, and I could treat other people better. And whatever ways I can find to do that, that don't turn me into more of an asshole secretly and really help me heal and be kinder to myself and others. That's it, man. So thank you for caring enough about that. And I wanted to say while we're here, I don't know if you know, happen to know a guy called Terrence Real, but he's a lovely therapist who works with men a lot. He works with all genders. But I met him when I was doing a documentary on fathers and sons years ago, and he was the therapist who was kind of walking us through some shit. And he wrote a book called I Don't Want to Talk About It, Uncovering the Secret Legacy of Male Depression. And it is just a stunner. So for anyone out there who just wants one solid recommendation, have nothing to do with music, go get I Don't Want to Talk About It and just check it out. And frankly, again, that's for any gender because it all applies everywhere. It's just if we're ready to be honest with ourselves.
The more we internalize things, often the more it intensifies, right? And if we're not getting those feelings out, whether, some of those icky feelings of sadness and anger and anxiousness and whatever it is, the more it intensifies. And the more it intensifies,
That's right.
the more dangerous it becomes and the more damaging it becomes. And things like, in my world, we call them coping activities. Even for me, it might be a round of golf, right? Where I just go out with my buddies. And we all complain about our man, this week sucked, and my wife said this, and that got on my nerves, and whatever it is. But even just that small release of some of those feelings, it's helpful.
Yeah.
But I also, for my own mental health, I have to be intentional about having that in my life, right? Because then
Yes.
I'm a better
Yes.
person when I do get to release that, however way it is. I use golf as just a silly example, but there's
Yeah,
no.
that's the thing. That's right. 'Cause it could be, it doesn't matter what it is. Thank you for using one that you're like, it doesn't really matter what this is, but there's something about I fucking hate golf, but I do really
I do
respect
too,
the
by the way.
idea of being out in the quiet with a few people, ostensibly that one cares about. I think that's good medicine right there. And I love the idea. I think the most powerful thing that we can do together is sharing our stories and sharing our flaws and the embarrassment that I did today and the thing that pissed me off that I know I shouldn't have been that pissed off about, but I was thinking about my mom, so I applied it to this. It's just, it's all the things, man. So good. So good.
Just curious, where do you think we are with the state of mental health? Do you think we're getting better at it than, I'm in my 40s. I'm not sure how old you are. I would imagine around there. Since
Oh,
we,
I appreciate you.
so since we were younger in the 80s and 90s, do you think we're getting better at it? Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you could talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable. Whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call, you can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/the barn. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/the barn.
I know I am. Sounds like you are. There are certainly, for millennia now, there have been no shortage of tools to work on oneself. I think it does come down to this pesky conditioning, messaging, patriarchy thing we're talking about. And I mentioned that in particular because it really patriarchy does seem to be the author of the that there are these very specific gender roles and people are supposed to be a certain way. So I don't, you know, just because it's a hot button word, but that's what I'm saying when I say that. But yeah, I don't know. Looking at the world, gosh, as tenderly as I can say it, I'm not saying to be hyperbolic or anything. No, I mean, I think we're totally fucking doomed. I don't see us caring about our internal worlds nearly enough. We keep mistaking the outside world for the inside world, and everyone's out there trying to fix, control, kill everyone but themselves. And so it's this kind of hall of mirrors thing, except no one knows it's mirrors. So no, I think we're doing terribly. Very specifically in this country, I think Reagan's slashing mental health in the 80s, along with public schools, is a direct line to our democracy being in a really fragile state right now. I couldn't believe that more. And I think mental health resources being taken away on a public level to such a huge degree, only history will be able to accurately say how horrible a call that was for our nation. But I don't know, to try and get silver lining-y about it, maybe it's just darkest before the dawn kind of thing. And just to really, to kind of get back from the doomsday cliff, I think for me, I totally want the world to be okay. I really do. I want it to heal. I want men to stop raping and killing at the rate we do. I want so many things in the world. I could list and list and list and list. And ultimately, that's a little bit of part of my disease too. I can get really strung out on how poorly I think the world is doing, or how poorly a loved one is doing, or how poorly I think someone else is doing. And again, I can get really outside myself. So I think I am doing better at daily self-care, a little bit better every day. And if I get to the end of my days and I'm lucky enough to be able to reflect back on my life, and I see that every day I've gotten a little bit more steady dealing with my mental health, and again, how I react to the world, how I perceive the world, all these things. If I can die in joy and some semblance of serenity, then of course I'll be sad if the world didn't shape up. But the only thing I can control is myself. It's so stupid and simple, but it's just the fucking truth. So I think I'm getting a little bit better, and I think you are too. So I'm happy about that.
Cheers to us, right?
Right. I mean, you know, it's all we got. I don't know. Yeah. You know, I've spent my whole life trying to fucking fix my family and fix my loved ones and fix anyone around who was asking for help or wasn't asking for help and complaining about the world. I've done a lot of ranting about the world. I've done a lot of, yeah, research, and it doesn't lead to great places. And again, I think we're at the sort of the death of thought right now, the death of truth. And it's a wild time to be living in. I got to tell you. And all I know is that the less strung out I get on that stuff, the more I bring joy. And then the cool thing is that then I put a little bit more kindness into the world, and I notice my interactions going better, and that's other people I'm interacting with. So if that went better, then maybe their next interaction goes a little better. So maybe there's a ripple thing. I don't know, but I don't even want to try and do it with that intent. I'm just trying to do it, take care of myself, not because it's the only thing I care about, but it's because the only thing I can do anything about. So yeah.
Can I push back on that just a little bit?
Please. Yeah, give it.
Your music has helped people, and I'm sure.
Oh, hell yeah. Yes.
And I'm sure you've had people tell you that it's changed their lives, or it's bettered their lives, or it's gotten them through a certain time. What feeling comes with that?
Just, I can feel the happy tears now. I not a day goes by I don't get choked up thinking about it. Either someone writes something nice and I get reminded of it, or shit, yesterday I got this pressing of a record in the mail, this double vinyl of all the stuff I recorded like 25 years ago. And the fact that anyone cared enough about it, And specifically, the people that released it said, this record changed my life. This record saved my life. This record meant a lot to me. So we want to re-release it and do this nice stuff with it. I mean, made me cry opening up that record. So I adore that, and I appreciate the pushback. And to try, what I was going to say before I think I got lost in a babble was that me making music, almost more than the songs even, is my attempt, as far as the external world is. Well, no, it starts with me. It's my attempt to heal myself, I think. And in terms of what, if anything, I can give to the world, that's the best way I've figured out to offer ideas about how to take better care of oneself, to look oneself in the eye, to not blame other people, to feel one's feelings, all the things we're talking about. I've been trying to put that on the music forever, in ways that are overt and covert, and including the Sons of Alpha Centauri stuff. I mean, I've written some lyrics on there that really are about all the things we're talking about in ways that might be obvious or not. And I, so yeah, this is me trying to be a therapist in the world through music. And to kind of go back to circle back to what I love so much about you pushing back, is it lets me clarify, the only time I think my music is valuable to anyone is when I'm coming from some sort of sincere place. It doesn't matter what the song sounds like. It doesn't matter whether I'm happy, sad, angry, silly. When I'm able to shed my self-consciousness and shed what will people think and shed, is this a commercial enough thing, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever the resistance is, when I can let that shit go and just release something into the world, I think that something is what has the best shot at getting into someone's heart and shifting them. So I really appreciate you bringing that part in, because I care deeply about that. I've just come to believe that if I focus on changing anyone, even through music, I'm not making something that I think has the best shot of doing what I'm saying that I want to do. If I'm trying to impress somebody, to change someone, to make them feel a certain way, I think I'm trying to manipulate rather than just share. And so, yes, I really, really can't say enough. I mean, that's going to be my legacy, you know, is just not that many people around the world. But as far as me living on outside of me, is going to be people who are affected by the music I made. And of course, who I was as a human being and all that stuff and tried to be. But the fact is, in my particular case, my music has made it into a lot more ears than my words and my presence. So I adore that it ever helped anyone. And if it, man, if it helped you, especially as a counselor, especially the counselor in men's issues, you're my fucking dream of someone that listens to my music. Cause that's all I've ever wanted, is for people to talk to people, and especially men to talk to men, cause I'm scared to death of us. And I get why the rest of the world is too. And so, yeah, hell yeah. Let's change that shit one good chorus at a time.
And I think men talking about their struggles, and men being vulnerable in a public
sense. Men even admitting they have a struggle.
Yeah, and I think it does, you know, if you're wanting to change something that feels unchangeable, it has to start small, and that has to have full effect. And I do see that. Maybe I'm paid to be an optimist, I think, but maybe I'm a little bit more optimistic. But I do see, and I think too, is like, even this younger generation, they might, you know, you hear a lot of people sitting around the coffee shop saying, oh, this generation doesn't want to work and they're lazy and this and this and this. I think they actually have some things figured out that took us decades to figure out.
Hell yeah. I love that frame. I don't know what is true and what isn't. I do know that every goddamn generation has said about the next couple generations, oh, they're doing this. Blah, 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 blah. And it's so funny that none of us can realize that we're being our grandparents. You know, we're saying the exact same shit that they said about us. So that doesn't seem to be the winning formula. The winning formula seems to be, what is this generation got going for it that, like you just said, that we haven't figured out? And yes, I don't know what kind of how it's going to look in terms of the human race. I do know that there are younger people that seem to be onto some truths that, yeah, well, you just said it real well, that it's taken us decades to even start wrestling with. So I hope it's true. It's funny. I think I'm an optimist too, but like that phrase, it's going to be okay. That sort of ultimate platitude. I've kind of broken that up into two parts. There's sort of the universe or God or whatever anyone else wants to call it. That all that energy says is it's going to be. That's it. You know, let there be light or whatever the fuck, you know, it's going to be. And then what I get to say or not is, okay. And if the universe says it's going to be, and I refuse to say okay, if I refuse to acknowledge it, to accept it, if I'm fighting against it, my life probably won't go real good. Also, if it says, the universe says it's going to be, and I say, okay, and I go into it with that mood, that's probably not going to go well either. But if the universe says it's going to be, and I say, okay, that is going to be okay. And that's how I'm an optimist, is if I can get it together to say with a big smile, okay, universe, what you got? That's my best shot.
I'm going to make a weird comparison for you real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I love weird comparisons.
My favorite comedian of all time is Norm MacDonald.
He's a good one. He's a good one.
They always said that he was the comedian's comedian. And when I think about your career as an artist, your influence is everywhere. I'm sure you see it. And if you don't, you choose not to see it. But
oh, no, I do. I do. I do. Not with vanity or whatever, but I do. And I appreciate you.
You know, and talking about Norm MacDonald, and the comparison is like, you know, some of his jokes would last for several minutes long, and it would take the patience of the audience and the patience of the consumer to actually get to the final punchline. And sometimes there wasn't even a punchline.
That's right. That's right.
And to me, that's you know, a beautiful thing is having patience in your art, being a comedian's comedian or an artist, you know, all these influence bands and people that you've influenced throughout the years. Is that enough for you? Can you hang your hat on that, or does there need to be more?
Man, I swear to you, I think if I hang my hat on that, I've already failed. I can't hang my hat on that. I have to hang my hat on, what is it that people are paying attention to? What is it that people are caring about? And not try to give them that, but rather just even-headedly look at that and go, oh, I think they're responding to the fact that I'm really searching. I think what's cool about Norm MacDonald, and by the way, I can't even tell you how much I appreciate that comparison, and I do think of myself that way. Again, not in a vain way, but it's funny, I just wrote in this little liner notes thing, I never wanted to be number one. I just wanted to be one of one. And that is what I see in the Norm MacDonalds of the world. The people that, yeah, maybe they weren't the most widely known comic, maybe they didn't have the easiest punchlines. Maybe even I didn't get it sometimes, a lot of the time. I could just feel MacDonald fucking searching for the coolest, funniest, most truthful way to share something, always with that wry fucking grin, man. And I adore that. I mean, him, Hicks, Stephen Wright, Carlin, of course, Hedberg in a lot of ways. I adore stand up is just you're hitting on all the things. You're hitting on all my alternate careers. I think what the music I do and the performance I do is some combo of like therapy, ministry, again, non-denominational, I'm not trying to get all anything on anybody, and stand up. Like, like that's really, I think those are all things that I kind of want to do, or wanted to do part of me, but then music just took over my heart. And so all of that is coming through, and I'm feeling very very seen by you right now and really connected with you. So yeah, but yes, in terms of the world giving a shit, hell yeah. I think that I would take my last 30 years and where I am in my life right now, which is, by the way, still making music for a living, still able to make a living making music, a very modest living, I get it, but a really sweet living for 30 fucking years, man. I mean, I can't point to anyone else's career and life as far as I can see it and say that I would want that life, especially famous musicians. I don't think I would have done well. I think I would have ended up like Cornell and Bennington and fucking Kurt and John and Janis and Jimmy and Keith and Prince and Tom, and I mean all of the successful artists that have died too young or way too young or gotten all sorts of horrible trouble or all of it. Yeah, man. I'm really, really, it's not even just, am I okay with that? Is it enough? It is everything to me. But I'm still happy, still sane that my music got out into the world, that it's changed some lives, that all of this music will continue to ring out long after I'm gone, whenever that is. I feel really, really beyond fortunate about that. And yeah, so it's way more than enough, and I really appreciate you asking.
On the flip side of it, when you hear a band like Turnstile or
Sure. Cool one.
some of these newer, like I guess maybe you consider them hardcore bands, and the sound is very similar at times, and they're younger kids, so who knows what came across their radar and what didn't. And maybe that's a bad example, but when
No,
you
they're a great example, actually. I can tell you why. Turnstile, I just saw Mike Einzinger from Incubus posting that he had brought his kids to see Turnstile or something. They'd given him a bunch of merch. Anyway, long story short, the kids were dancing around and Mike was playing in a Turnstile song, I think acoustic, some kind of shit. And Incubus is a band that I know were deeply influenced by us. So there's already an ecosystem in which I would not be surprised if Turnstile, in one way or another, depending on who they were influenced by, came across something that I was a part of. And yes, I absolutely, I don't, I'm not saying that they were influenced by me at all. They might hate me. I really don't know. But when I hear Turnstile, when I see them, I'm definitely reminded of certainly what I've been trying to do. So I don't know how it works, but I love that you brought them up, man.
not them specifically, but is there ever, do you have to put your ego aside to not allow resentment in a way? Because you get your flowers from all the Biggies, the Chinos and the Linkin Parks, all this, but do you get your flowers in the way that maybe you deserve it? And does resentment come from that?
Resentment definitely comes from having an expectation of how things should be. And that's a perfect example of the universe saying it's gonna be, and me saying no. That's resentment. So yeah, man, I feel very fortunate that I'm not an overly sentimental person and that I'm not, it would seem, an overly resentful person. There have been times when I've been worried about money or feeling my self-esteem has been low, and I can get kind of resentful then of maybe say, no, I'm totally actually not going to name names. But I sometimes hear artists that I think have taken some of the more superficial elements of things that I was doing a while ago, along with a lot of other people. I don't want to overstate any of this, honestly, but to the degree that I have influenced people, there's sometimes when the superficial shit is what gets carried on, like this, sing real softly and then scream. It's like, that's not what it's about. Like, yeah, that's cool and everything, but it's not a parlor trick. So I see bands doing what I think are like parlor tricks with music, kind of based on some stuff from hardcore and post-hardcore and emo and indie and all this stuff. So I can get resentful. And well, to go back to mental health, this is what mental health is about, is not letting things like resentment of any sort eat me alive, but rather getting to recognize them in my body and go, wow, look at that little, oh, I'm judging this person, this band, this whatever, we're talking about bands now. So I'm judging this band. If I'm making some sort of critical judgment about it, I've probably got a little resentment in there somewhere. And so for me, being able to sort of lovingly, gently, vigilantly monitor my thoughts and check out my mental health via those thoughts is huge. And resentment is it's one of the first things I look for in terms of, am I up my own ass or am I not? Because generally when I'm up my own ass, I'm feeling resentful. So yeah, I appreciate that. And God's honest truth though, I'll bet I was more resentful maybe 20 years ago. But there was a point at which I hit this place where I just realized that my daughter was growing up and I was doing okay as a dad and I was making music and people were caring about it and it was literally giving the money I needed to live. That just a lot of my complaining and resentment really just melted away. And I don't think that was some act of will on my part. I just think it was seeing things in their right perspective. I wasn't making up some story about being a loser because I didn't have a platinum record or because of whatever. I was being in the reality of, I've had a relationship with my kid. I've had a relationship with human beings. I've made a lot of music. I've got enough money to live. I've got shelter. I can't figure out what to complain about. So yeah, I feel lucky that resentment has piled up because I've seen resentment even in some of the most successful people I've ever known. I've seen resentment eat them alive. I mean, I think that's where a lot of those addictions come from, is I'm not who I want to be. I want to be someone else. I want the world to be different. And then there comes the unhealthy coping mechanism.
I heard you on the Talk to Me podcast with Josh Toomey a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about Pony being your most song, right? Which, by the way, I actually love that cover, and I want to get into that
a little bit.
But
I love it too.
But does resentfulness come in with that? Because you've been making music for decades that really has changed the world and changed a lot of people. And it's this cover song of a 90s club banger that's your most streamed song on Spotify.
Yes. I mean, look, I hope that, I mean, maybe it's not like bolts to people, but I swear to you, I get such a fucking kick out of that. I do. Like this band, my first real band, a band that I cared about, and I'd still care about it forever. I mean, one of the test presses that I got yesterday, not test presses, but one of the first of the pressing I got was this repress of Tin Cans with Strings to You, the first far record on Sony. And I adore it so much. And actually the first song on it is called What I've Wanted to Say. And it's pretty much this whole conversation in one really loud song. And so I fucking adore that shit. And I love that after all of these really intense songs and moments that someone might, you know, Shazam a fucking our cover of Pony, and there they end up. And then they have to go through all this other stuff we made. I think the next, I think what else is up there? Our cover of Savory might be up there because we did it with Deftones basically. Mother Mary's up there. I think Barry White's up there, but they're way behind Pony. Everything's way behind Pony. I fucking love Pony. And I think part of the reason, and this is just me making shit up, but I think part of the reason that song was and is as popular as it is, that recording, is partly the song is fucking incredible. But our recording of it, I think, worked on such a big level because we didn't try to make fun of it. We didn't try to make a gimmick of it. I know that I sound kind of dumb singing that song. And that's part of the reason I sing it, because I fucking love that song. And Farr used to put that, you know, Ginuwine's version on our little pre-show mix to kind of get the crowd going good, because there'd be all these different kinds of people at our shows, but everyone could agree on bow, chicka, you know, I mean, just how do you not fuck with that song? And so my sincerity and our sincerity, I think, came through on the recording. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if you heard this on Talk to Me, but one of the coolest, talk about having an effect on anyone, one of the coolest things that ever happened to me in my whole life is Ginuwine, after our cover of his song blew the fuck up, he got more attention after that. And he invited me to his San Francisco show. And he said to me, thank you for helping to resurrect my career.
Wow.
I mean, you know, like, those are the moments. That doesn't get me any money. He didn't offer me to take me on tour. He didn't offer me to co-write with him. You know, I didn't get to meet Timbaland, you know, nothing happened. But to know that another artist appreciated what I did with their material and that it helped them in their life, I was goofing off in Sean's garage, man. And I feel so fortunate about that. And I think it's such a lovely reminder that the silly idea, the idea that no one thinks about too much, that no one really cares about even that much, that people just do is for a laugh, just to hang out together, which is exactly why and how we recorded that song. There was no promo behind that song. There was no label. There was no nothing. That's the stuff sometimes that can really make a dent in the world. Because I think our egos were very to the side. I think we were just trying to do that song justice that we loved so much. And I really think that came through. And who knows? Could just be a fun gimmick and blah, blah, blah. But I choose to believe that that is the most popular thing that Farr will ever do, because we kind of were able to put aside fighting and put aside everything else and just make a banger, put it out into the world.
Two things about it real quick. One, I do think it's a great song, and I think that's part of it.
It's fantastic. It's fucking perfect. I mean, it's over. It's over.
Very rhythmic, and yeah, I just think it's a great song. But two, can you tell us about the production of it? Because the guitar sounds so thick. It sounds
that's Sean, man.
It sounds like a club banger. Like, if you had put that on in the club, there'd be some asses shaking.
I'm telling you.
That. So,
yeah, we did not want to do a rock and roll version of Pony. Yes, we love guitars. Sean really loves guitars. But we were trying to not beat it, because nothing can beat the original, but we were trying to do justice to this song. And Sean in particular is a really, really incredible and fastidious producer and engineer. And he put a lot of work into that. And again, no one was paying us money. No one was asking us to record this song. This was just us. And he just worked and worked and worked on that mix until it was what you hear. And yeah, the mix of the guitar and the synth and the bass, I don't even know what he put into that thing, but man, it's a fucking rhinoceros, isn't it? I mean, it's just tremendous. And I can never thank him enough for, again, taking that seriously. He could have just laughed that off and spit it out in a day. And I really love that he took the time to really try and put his stamp on it and make it something special, which I think it is. I do. I really do. And it might sound silly, but I think it's as special as anything I've ever been a part of making. And that's what I'm saying is that it doesn't matter whether it's silly or horny or sad or mad or scary or fast or slow. It's about putting my whole fucking heart into it. It really is.
We're talking about production here and the producer role. You know, we learned the news yesterday that Steve Albini passed away. Did you ever get a chance to, did your paths ever cross? Did you ever get a chance to work with him? And if not,
if not,
you know, what is the role of the producer and how important is it when you're in the studio and when you're making records?
So Albini, no, sadly, I was real sad, of course, when I heard about it. And by the way, I'm 54, just to circle back to that. He was 61, I believe. And, you know, that's not far off where I'm at. And so for me staying healthy, mentally, physically, all of it, it's ever more important. I remember when MCA died, he was really young too. And it freaked me the fuck out. I mean, all the deaths really get to me, of course. But Albini, it's still kind of going through me. It's echoing through me. But anyway, when I wrote on Twitter, when I heard about it, all I could think to write was, I had a secret dream that Albini would record me someday somehow. And it's just one of those reminders that whatever my dreams are, hop the fuck to it. Ask. I feel very sad that I didn't track down Albini somehow and get in a room with him just to sing a song. And it's not that he was some idol or anything. It's that I really consider him just another animal that loved music so much, that loved sound, the effect of sound on a body. Man, he made the most fleshy recordings. And I don't know, you know, he's one of those producers that in a weird way, he just wanted to step back and preserve what was happening as naturally as possible. And it sounded, from what I heard him say, sounded like he wasn't up for a lot of the bells and whistles. He just wanted to mic shit real well and have a good song and have a good performance. And that's that. So one would think that that wasn't that important, but then hear all these people saying what a big deal that was. So what I think a producer does is the same way I play guitar or I play my voice or whatever. A producer, a good producer is playing the band the way they know how to play a band. They're getting out of every member of the band intuitively the best of that performance, the best of that song. And again, I didn't do it with Albini, so I don't really know, but I can think of, you know, Brad Wood, who I did a record with, taught me so much about really knowing my melodies. He'd have a little piano in front of me right before I sang a vocal take so I could plunk out whatever melody I was about to sing. And I'd really be focused on the melody and not trying to over emote or whatever I was trying to do. Never forgot that. Dave Sardi, who did produce Water and Solutions, he cut about a minute out of every song on Water and Solutions and made it so much better and showed me again how to really lay back in my vocal performances and not to worry too much about it, but just to count on the melody that I'd written, the words that I'd written, and to really just try and be the deliverer of them as opposed to try and fancy it up or anything. And in that way, I'm mentioning those things because Albini, I think, was an eternal wizard at that. At just, don't try and overdo it. Just what's your idea? And if it's good, it'll be good. Jay Robbins, who I've had the fortune to work with, and I know has worked with Albini and loved Albini a lot closer than I ever got to. Jay Robbins, all I saw him post was, it sounds good, because it is good. And he was attributing that to Albini. And his simplicity around music, I can't even tell you how much that has inspired me. Again, this thing, Sketchbook, that just got re-released. I mean, it's all these recordings that are just, they're beyond simple. And I really wish I'd gotten to do that kind of thing with Albini. I think he probably would have hated a lot of what I do, which I love. And I think we would have really gotten along in the end. I bet we would have fought, and then we would have broke down laughing at some point. Anyway, that's my daydream. I miss Albini. I'm sad I didn't get to hang with him. And I think a producer is there to get the most out of a guitarist the way a guitarist is supposed to get the most out of a guitar. That's what I think a producer does.
We recently talked to Steve Von Till of Neurosis, and he worked with
Oh my
Albini.
God, another huge influence.
For you?
Oh yeah. Fucking seeing Neurosis in 90. I saw Neurosis at I believe Rock Candy in Seattle, our first trip up there to play Color Box in like 91 or 92. And we got to see Neurosis just fucking level a room of about 1,000 people. And I was one of those 1,000 people. Changed me forever. Anyway, thanks for bringing him up. Okay, Neurosis, yeah. You're talking to that dude. It's amazing.
Yeah, just the scariest band ever, you know. But it's,
Yes, the stuff of nightmares. Hell
yeah.
yeah.
But it, to me, I think I see some comparison there too to your career. Is
Yes, thank you.
your music was always emotive, you know.
Yes.
That's what you feels like what you made music for. And Neurosis is the same way. Maybe it's a different emotion, you know. Maybe it's
That's exactly right. Yes.
Maybe it's anger and you know, some negative kind of things, but it's the same thing. But anyway, we were talking to Steve, which, you know, I'm a huge fan as well, so that wasn't an easy conversation to do, much like this one isn't. But
No.
he was talking about Steve Albini and working with him, and you know, he said more than anything, I think he just kind of stayed out of the way, and like you're saying, he got the best out of the band, and his list of work is just incredible.
I mean, no, it's insane. And it's funny because my friend Zach, now I'm talking about all the Albini sort of little tributes in this age of the pithy tribute. My friend Zach told a funny story about he was in a venue. He had heard Albini had died, and he was in a venue waiting to play, and the music was at that level where the ambient noise of everyone talking was way louder than the music. So you really couldn't hear what was coming on. It was just some alt rock radio station on. But he said Heart Shaped Box came on, and the reason he knew it was that is because he heard Albini's snare drum. And that was the thing that cut through the noise of the shitty little club and all the people talking, was Albini's snare drum. And that said it as well as anything I could think of. And first of all, to your point about emotion, I couldn't agree more. I know emo is this hilariously weird, dirty word at this point, but all it ever meant to me was whatever emotion I got, try to do that as cleanly and clearly as possible. And I mean, look, Neurosis wasn't, they didn't call themselves, you know, Happy Times and sound the way they did. They're called Neurosis, you know? And if there is the sound of Neurosis, I mean, that's it. And so to me, mission accomplished. And there is no emotion that is more or less important to express fully. I think it's important to think about how we express feelings fully, especially around anger and stuff like that. But the expression of anger through music and everything I've ever heard Neurosis say, he was pretty chill, right? Talking to him, is that true?
Very much so. It was much
Yeah,
like
like,
this.
yeah, he's always seemed very, very kind to me and very gentle, which one might not think listening to that music, but that's why I think a lot of us, Eddie Vedder once said, sometimes the saddest songs are the happiest songs because they get me through the shitty times. And that's, I hope, what Neurosis was doing was that I think they're being honest about what they're seeing and feeling. And they're expressing it and giving people a place to process it where we're not murdering other people. We just get to bathe in their might. And I know I always felt better after it. So yeah, I'd really appreciate that comparison. I appreciate the talk about the emotions and that there's such a direct line from me to Neurosis. And again, a lot of people would laugh at that, but I think the people that love what I do, just to really try and bring it home with this kind of thing, and as far as whatever my legacy has been, I think the people who really, really have loved my music the most, and the people who I've certainly felt the most understood by, are not the people that love the quiet stuff or the loud stuff or the silly stuff or the heavy stuff, whatever it is. The people who kind of like get that I'm about all of it. And one thing I'll say for myself is that I can't think of an artist in the last 30 years that has fucked around as much as I have in different, with different labels, with different methods of releasing things, with different ways of communicating with people, with different genres, with different volumes, with different feelings, with different production styles. And I'm really, that I'm really fucking proud of. I don't know whether anyone likes it or not. I don't know when, whatever, but I'm really, really, really proud of the fact that I can't think of anyone else like that. And Neurosis, them being so deeply themselves, they inspired me so much. So I just, as much as any artist, really, because they were just so pure, are they still playing?
No, there was some bad stuff that happened, I think.
Right. Horrible shit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I could, it's, the world is so noisy these days that sometimes don't even know who's died and who's become a monster, or who maybe who always was a monster. I don't even know. But anyway, they made some music that helped me through a lot of really, really, really dark times. Just knowing they existed. And if I ever, I just did a song called But You Said, which doesn't really sound like a Neurosis song at all, but in a way it does. And it does explore some really, really heavy, dark sounds and feelings and thoughts. It's called But You Said, just came out on a record called Plutocracy Planet. It's a little neat collaboration record. And I'm mostly saying that for you right now because I'm having so much fun talking with you. I think you'll really love that song if you hear it. And because you seem to get this weird thing I'm going for, which is just be your fucking self and go for it and let other people in and be vulnerable. And yeah, Neurosis to me was all that shit, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Something that can be so dark can also be very beautiful.
Yes. Yes. It's so simple. Thank you.
And when I listen to Neurosis, it sounds angry. It sounds pissed off. And there's a lot of reason to be angry and pissed off. But there's just so much beauty in that, because I think it is the same reason why Far might touch somebody on a very deep level. You're connecting. You're hitting something inside somebody, inside the listener, inside of your fan.
Primal shit, pre-verbal shit. Like shit that's underneath all the stuff that we build up when we grow up. Just, you know, the first time our fucking dad yelled at us, or the first, you know, or the first time that we got laid, or whatever it is, like these really primal feelings, you know, of growing up. To me, at its best, music gets right to that spot. And even if I don't know I'm feeling that, I'm feeling it. It's really amazing. And Neurosis did that as well as any artist I know of.
I'm embarrassed that we're just now getting to the new record, but here we are.
Nah, fuck it. It's so good.
You know, your latest, it's, you know, your follow-up, 2021, you released Pull, or with Push. With Push.
Yeah, no, Pull, Push first, now Pull.
And now we have Pull out with Sons of Alpha Centauri. Tell us about that record, what it was like making that record, and, you know, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, so this is neat because the only reason really that I'm talking to you in this context of this band is because I did a thing in a different way than most artists do it. And so I met Sons of Alpha Centauri because one of the ways in which I make a living making music is that if someone who isn't necessarily someone trying to get famous, or they have another job, but they're doing music for a hobby. But real passion. I don't mean a hobby in a diminishing way. I mean a thing they just love, but it's not about making a bunch of money for them. They'll pay me to sing on their song, or to help them write their song, or to, I'll kind of like be a rock coach in a lot of ways, or a rock therapist, if you will. And a lot of times I do that, no one ever hears about it because the person isn't putting any money into promoting it because it was never about that. And so it's just a kind of a real personal thing between me and the artist. And that's how it started with Sons of Alpha Centauri. I knew they were a band. They were an instrumental band. And they said, hey, we're thinking about having a singer. This is how they approached me. And the only voice that we could really, really imagine over this music that we could really dream of is yours. We really love what you did with Far and blah, blah. And so that's how that started, is just them saying, just as an experiment, just between us, can we throw you a few hundred bucks and we sing over this instrumental, just see what happens. And so I said, cool, sure. And they loved it and I loved it. It was really fun. They sent me some more. And I'd say I've never done the timeline on this, but I probably should. Probably like 2 years after the first time we started exchanging recordings, Push came out. And so how it worked was they would send me instrumentals. I'd sit with them. I tried recording sometimes and sending them vocal tracks over that they would then mix in. And then I would be on tour in England and they'd set up a 2 or 3 day recording session. And I'd go and I'd hang out with their families. And then we'd go to the studio and make some music. So that's what made this music, is it's not really being in a band in the traditional sense. And so the only reason you're talking to me is because in pop music, generally, people focus on the singer. So I'm ironically not really even in this band. The band is those dudes. And I'm kind of just the ringer singer. And again, I don't mean to diminish them or me when I say that. I just think it's fucking cool that it wasn't about a bunch of rehearsal and we didn't fight over the vision of the band. It was just, they made some music. They wanted to hear my voice on it. I love the idea of my voice as just an instrument and not having to worry about writing the whole song or caring about it or all of the things, just getting to be a singer, just a singer, just a voice. I love that. And so that's all that is just some people that really adore music making it. And so the reason that an interview is happening at all around this music is because they had some money from their jobs that they wanted to put towards promoting it. And I presume they hired someone who got in touch with you, who heard that I was a part of it. And you're like, cool, I'm into it. And so I'm happy to help in that way. But it really is just such a lovely thing because it isn't fraught with all of the band stuff. We just make music very slowly, very gently. We don't really even give each other advice on what to do or not. I generally sing over exactly the tracks they send me, and then they go and they add more stuff. I mean, I sing over the basic arrangements and then they go and do stuff to it. And I just really, I love it so much. It's such an easygoing musical thing. And now all of a sudden we've got two records that I think are pretty fucking cool. In their own way, I think they're very unique sounding rock records. I think their music is very, very influenced by the stuff I started making in the mid 90s. And I love that. And I love that I get to sing 30 years later over music that was inspired by music from 30 years ago. I get to sing over it and be the human that I am now, be the animal that I am now, and interact with this badass, fucking sludgy, riffy, atmospheric music without having to practice, without having to go on tour, without having to have fights about the album art, without, Like, I just love it. So anyway, that's where it's at. That's what the process is. It's a very simple, musical, loving, ego-free process. It's love. It's great.
I definitely hear the sound there. It reminds me of the 90s, and maybe I'm a little biased, but I think it was one of the
No, they're very open to that. That literally, I could probably find the first email. They're like, we love 90s Sacramento fucking hardcore and rock. Like, that's what we love. We're doing this kind of weird atmospheric version of it. We kind of want to try it with a singer. You got to be the guy. And that was the pitch. So you're spot on, man.
And it sounds like you're really liking the freedom that sort of it is, the project that it is, the band that it is. Is there ever any talk about touring or playing shows?
Nothing serious. There's a couple times when I've been on tour over in England doing solo stuff, and they're from England. And we've talked about doing shows within a tour of mine or something, and it's never happened. And I think that's they've got their own lives going on. They're going through whatever they're going through. We really don't talk that often. It's always so sweet when we do. But nah, I can't really picture it, because also the two main guys who just Nick and Marlon, who are just so sweet. I just can't say enough about them. I'm picturing them right now. Those guys are so fastidious about this stuff. They really, 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 really want to make something that they love and make something that they think is quality. And for that reason, it's tough to imagine them getting to put the time that they would want to into preparing a live performance that would do justice the way I think they would want it done. Does that make sense? I would go out tomorrow and just bang fucking some tunes out with them. And I think it'd be great. And I don't think it's ever going to happen, because they have very rich family lives and very rich personal lives. And shit, you know, Mitch is from the States. I'm from the States. We're from, you know, different places in the States. I'm in Oregon. Mitch, I presume, is still in Sacramento or somewhere around there, somewhere in California. Those guys are over there. I just don't even know how it would happen. It's very, a lot would have to, I would say, just put it out there, one of these songs would have to get popular in some sort of pony-ish way for us to, you know, as in a very mysterious, surprising way, for us to even think about doing a show. Because frankly, that's the only time any sort of resources or money would be there to do it. Putting on rock and roll shows is expensive. Getting everybody there, getting the gear there, you know, it's not for nothing. So I don't think it'll ever happen. But yes, you're right. I adore that. I love it. And if it ever does, that'll be really fun too.
My audience would probably kick my ass if I didn't ask you about Farr. If you're talking to those guys, if there's any kind of update there.
Nothing. Sadly, I think about them, I kid you not, about every day. I really appreciate them. They're family for me forever. And Farr was my first lesson in how difficult a band is interpersonally, at least for people like me who are kind of struggle with mental health sometimes. And it's a minefield doing a band. A lot of ego stuff, a lot of just different visions. I was just on another podcast actually that kind of talks about mental health as it pertains to musicians. And I think the basic problem with a band is that all these people get together. I got into music because I had trouble expressing my feelings through words effectively. And I presume that some version of that is true for most musicians who are serious, is that they're really trying to express themselves in a way that they have difficulty expressing themselves otherwise. The problem is, then add that all the hopes and dreams, all the fears of failure, all the expectations of success, all the pressures, all the hours on the road, all the hours in the rehearsal room, all the ego, all the everything. And remember, it's still just 4, 5, 6 people who weren't that good at communicating in the first place. So to really find a band where everybody gets along in some intuitive way, I mean, that shit is just rarer than rainbows, man. It's a real strange thing. So that's all to say, again, I would hop on stage with Farr tomorrow. Tomorrow. I love them forever. I think that they have brought out things in me that I feel very grateful for. And I hope that I've brought good things out of them and helped them through this life in some way. And through whatever stupid fights we've had, I hope there's some semblance of that feeling. I talk to Johnny pretty regularly. Haven't talked to Chris or Sean in a while. Sean and I, very typical of singers and guitarists, we butted heads the most and fought the most. And he is not a particularly forthcoming guy with his feelings in the way that I am. And we've always had a lot of trouble communicating. And I don't blame anyone for that. So I think it's funny. I don't know where Chris or Johnny is at. I mean, Johnny seems pretty burnt on the whole thing. He's had to watch us all fight forever. He's just over us all, but in a lovely, you know, lovely way. Like, in a really, he's not mad at me or anything, but he's tired of the whole thing. I would do it tomorrow. I think Chris would do it tomorrow. Me and Chris were always the kind of eager beavers of the bunch. We were always up for it, whether that was a good or a bad idea. And Sean, he's like the Suns guys. He really wants shit to sound and look and everything just right, just right. And I have fought with him a lot about that over the years, and I've come to deeply, deeply love and respect that about him, to the degree that, looking back on Farr, I kind of wish I'd listened to him a little more and been a little bit fancier and a little bit more refined and a little bit less fucking weird like I am. And by weird, I suppose I mean prone to changing the set different nights, prone to talking a bunch in between songs, prone to making a really strange recording and releasing it, prone to not following any rules. Sean, he really was always trying to reel me in. And I used to hate that. And now I don't want to be reeled in anymore, but I can see where he was going and I can see how what he brought. I always knew it was valuable. It's nothing like that. But I can see how what he brought was just him. That was what he brought. And that was me fighting him and resenting him when I didn't need to. And I think him fighting and resenting me when he didn't need to, but I can't speak for him. So it was just another band, honestly, in that way, in the terms of the fighting and the bullshit. There's no big crazy story, thank goodness. There's no big monster. No one was terrible to anyone else. And thankfully, we all seem to be doing pretty good in life. I hope they are. But I appreciate you asking. And anytime you ever talk to them, you can let them know I'm up for it. Give me a call.
Absolutely will do. I would never ask this in a million years, but this conversation has went so well today, and I've taken up too much of your time.
Wow, it sure did. No, but, no, this was I forgot about the time. This has been a really, really lovely conversation, man. In fact, I don't know if we're directly connected by the email, but I would love it if you wrote to whoever got in touch with you about this interview. And they can totally give you my email or whatever it is. But I'd love to keep in touch and hear more about your therapeutic practice and maybe talk to you a little bit more about the intersection of music and mental health. And I've got some ideas along that level. So anyway, this was a lovely conversation, man. I appreciate you.
We are friends on Facebook. Me and you are. We actually
Oh, then wow. We go, we bet we were real tight then.
Yeah, I guess so. You accepted that I'm a random dude.
I do. I anyone that gives a shit enough to reach out and whatever, I am happy to have them. So okay, dude, then this, zap me on Facebook and we'll find a way out of the inbox, okay?
Perfect. But before we get out of here,
oh yeah,
you have the guitar there. Could you give my audience and more so me a few seconds of Barry White?
To resurrect cell. Let's do this one just for fun. I'll blow out the mic at the end. We dance along the wire, bunch of piranha. We dress ourselves in work. We're on all over her. We're always searching for what's right. It's a sweet lover. Left me nowhere. Yes, I don't know if that made any sense at all.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much for that.
Always, man. Anytime. Please keep in touch, Chad. So sweet. Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
Be good.
To resurrect ourselves, we disembowel our saints. We never underestimate the destructive power of change. We find another way, we dream.
Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you could talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable. Whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call, you can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/the barn. That's betterhelp.com/the barn.